south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's talk about money and the acceptance of U.S. funny money here in Latin America. Of course, everyone down here loves the U.S. dollar, like they do everything up in the States. However, you only find it's pretty much universally accepted on the gringo tourist trail and in the business districts where they've got first world hotels and stuff when you're off the gringo tourist trail. But even then, notice when you hand over a Lincoln or a Franklin, they'll hold it up to the light, first seemingly checking for watermarks in that little mylar strip. But you know, it seems only people in banks actually know what they're looking for in that respect, though everyone else will hold it up to the light and do the same, pretending they actually know what the hell they're doing. However, what they're really looking for, not so much that it's counterfeit, they're looking for tears, rips, doodles, or scratches. Because just even the tiniest of smudges or pen or pencil marks will be refused when the business owner tallies up at the end of the day and finally turns that money into his bank. You've heard me say this before, when you bring U.S. dollars down to Latin America, they better be absolutely perfect. Because locals know if they've got any kind of defect at all, they'll get rejected, and then they'll be stuck with some dollars they can't do anything with, at least for the time being. Unless, of course, they live in El Salvador, Panama, Ecuador, or Belize, where the U.S. dollar funny money is, for better or worse, the local legal tender. Now, it is true that every mom-and-pop little store will have one or more counterfeit U.S. dollar bills, usually a 20-year of Franklin, taped to the cash register or display case. They've all been gouged that way, so they're mighty cautious. But here's the point. There are absolutely perfect counterfeit 100s and 20s floating around Latin America, in fact, all over the world. I mean, come on, in this age of high-tech and 3D printers and all that, if you think the bad guys and no-good nicks can't reproduce what's on a piece of paper in two dimensions, no less, come on. Oh, I know, the paper's special, but they can reproduce that too. And guess who's really good at reproducing that stuff? Would you believe China and North Korea? Yep, was talking to a U.S. government agency type the other day. Those guys are around all right, generally hanging around in gringo tourist areas. Why not? It's the place to observe gringo expats. I mean, come on, it's beyond belief that we'd all want to leave the good old U.S. of A. To them, we're just a bunch of troublemakers on the fringe. Somehow we've escaped the barnyard or off the grid somewhat. And Uncle Sam and his minions aren't liking that too much. So yes, over the years I've spotted more than a few government types, embassy types, and U.S. military types. The U.S. government has a presence everywhere. They want their fingers in everything, but you knew that already. By the way, when I run into those military and agency types, I give them great big dollops of misinformation when they ask about me. Hell, I'm always trying to pump them for information. Why not? They don't know it, but they really are the enemy, you know. I mean, come on, why do you think so many gringos and expats are heading south of the border? Because the U.S. government has provided such a paradise for all its citizens? Anyway, most of these guys like to drink, and when people drink, they talk. Though I'm the exception, I don't drink, but I still talk. Though, like I said, with dollops of misinformation. Anyway, the subject got around to the U.S. and its enemies. That would be practically everyone we don't buy off these days, right? Anyway, he said North Korea's not going away. He says they talk about the U.S. putting pressure on China to rein in their bad little pudgy boy in North Korea. But this guy said he knows for a fact and has been involved in investigations of counterfeit dough, and North Korea is the biggest producer of counterfeit 20s and $100 bills. They're absolutely perfect. It's a huge business and moneymaker for them. They sell them on the black market to other no-good nicks like the Russian mafia for 40 cents on the dollar in exchange for real funny money dollars and euros. So in effect, he says it doesn't matter how many sanctions you put on these guys, they're never going to run out of U.S. dollars and euros. They just have to keep the presses running. They can do that a mile deep down in a bunker, whether bombs are flying overhead or not. So he said, don't fool yourself. Sanctions against North Korea don't mean poop. He said it'd be way too risky for the Chinese to print perfect U.S. money, but of course they benefit greatly too. They let the little gnome do it. So why am I bringing this up? What does this have to do with living in Latin America? Well, that's one of the reasons why they check your 20s and your $100 bills so thoroughly. And why? Occasionally when you walk into a bank or place of business or hotel, there will be a sign that says, we do not take U.S. $100 bills. Then again, I've been in banks, hotels, and places of business where they have a sign saying, we do not take U.S. $20 bills, so go figure. However, again, if you're in a country like Salvador or Panama, whose currency is the U.S. dollar, they'll take a ripped, torn, or mutilated bill just like they will up in the States. In fact, I and many long-term gringos and expats have small collections of imperfect U.S. dollar currency always ready to tote it along when we're visiting a country like Panama that uses U.S. funny money. By the way, there's so many different kinds and colors of Latin American funny money, I don't think an average or even above average gringo could tell counterfeit local currency from the real thing, even if done on a cheap inkjet printer on toilet paper. Then again, the default use for most funny money is TP, right? By the way, if you ever get stuck holding the bag, that is, someone says, hey, that's a counterfeit peso or lempira note you've got there. I'm not taking that thing. Some local businessmen who handle money a lot can tell the difference, though you never will be able to. Well, just know there's no use contacting the authorities. There's no FBI to call. Just do what everyone else does. Play hot potato and pass it on to the next guy. Because technically, you know, it's all a scam, whether it's printed by the government or printed in somebody's basement. Neither are worth the paper they're printed on. They're backed by nothing. All right, so changing gears a bit. I was talking to an expat gringo the other day. He's been down here 3 or 4 years, and he said, Johnny, I just experienced a little calamity at the place I've been renting. I think your listeners ought to know about this. All right, so listen up, because this will probably happen to you. Just a little background first. This guy is living in the Central American Altiplano region, around 6,000 feet above sea level. He's only about 2.5 hours from the Atlantic or Pacific side. And all of us eventually want to have a little vacation at the beach, you know? Including him. Little change of scenery and all that, because you know, even when you're in eternal spring-like weather, it can get monotonous. You know, too much of a good thing and all that. So anyway, he closed up his two-story condo and went to the beach. Came back a week later on a Sunday. It was very quiet in the house. He sat down on the living room sofa and heard the unmistakable sound of running water. He was thinking, oh no, water damage. And so he checked all around the house. No water damage, but his upstairs toilet had been running for a week. And when he got his water bill, which was normally around $15 a month, this time, $85. All right, so here's what you have to know, along with the relevant tips for gringos and expats. You see, one of the big problems you'll find when you're living down here in Latin America and renting is that they put cheap plumbing fixtures, you know, faucets, drains, and stuff, even in so-called expensive housing and high-end subdivisions. Now, that's not to say they always cheap out, but, for example, you can go into a very nicely appointed first-world-style condo. They'll have luxury items like Spanish tile, real marble or granite countertops, even perhaps an American standard or Kohler sink in the kitchen. You know, that's high-end stuff. However, the faucets and the fixtures on that Kohler sink could be some cheap-ass, low-cost garbage made in Mexico or Costa Rica. You might find faucets like that throughout the house, or maybe just in certain areas, like the guest room or the so-called cuarto de servicio. That would be the maid's quarters. So that's true if you're renting or buying an existing house. Of course, if you're building a house, you'll get a chance to pick out your own fixtures. That's usually how it works, right? By the way, don't skip that step and let your builder or architect pick them out, or you'll be sorry. However, when it comes to renting or purchasing an existing home, just never assume if you got some high-end fixtures in the kitchen or the master bedroom that they used high-quality fixtures to the rest of the house. And the worst offenders, the flapper and the inside mechanism, the guts of the toilet tanks in your house. For example, I once built a house and went through various hardware stores to pick out gringo-sized toilets. Now, don't laugh. 10 years ago or so, it was very difficult, especially off the gringo tourist trail, to go to a hardware store or plumbing fixture store and find your regular Kohler or American standard toilets in the color or colors you want, sized for, well, gringo butts. Instead, you'd see all kinds of toilets and sinks sized for little people. In fact, I guarantee you, if you come down here and bond with the Latin people and visit their houses, get invited to parties and such, you'll be shocked to see that probably 80% of the toilets and sinks are what you might first think as kiddie or midget-sized. Now, admittedly, most Americans are much bigger than Latins in both vertical and horizontal dimensions. You'll notice those things right away, especially if you're on the tall side. I'm 6 foot and I've whacked my head on many a door jam. And since I'm here in Latin America, no one to sue. How about that? Oh, and you really have to keep your eyes peeled for how Latins make stairs and staircases. Now, with U.S. building codes, when you make stairs, there's a 7-inch rise and an 11-inch run. The run being the flat part of the stair where your foot lands. However, here in Latin America, no one's watching or inspecting, so those numbers could be all over the place. And believe me, they are. Which means, since we've been programmed all our lives for a certain uniform stair height and width, our bodies have a deeply ingrained intrinsic memory of how to take stairs. We can do it in the dark, do it in our sleep. That means when there's a non-standard height, like you'll find all over the place here, you'll stumble, trip, and fall. Which means you will learn in a hurry to look down and take the stairs slowly. The big problem is, a lot of staircases are terribly lit or not lit at all, so at night, you really have to be on guard. But back to our gringo, whose toilet ran continuously for a week. My suggestion, unless you buy a first-world brand like American Standard or Kohler, they always have high-quality flush and fill mechanisms. One of the first things I recommend that you do when you move into a house, apartment, condo, whatever, is to go down to a big local hardware store or plumbing house and buy an all-new replacement parts package for each of your toilet tanks. Do buy a high-end brand, one that was made in the States. Well, take that back. Nothing's made in the States. It's designed in the States and made in Mexico or China, but you know the drill. And you know what? That'll only set you back around $10 a toilet. So you got three toilets, $30. But let me tell you, spending $30 will save you a hell of a lot of grief in the future. Because even if you find a nice, stylish Latin brand toilet, like I found and outfitted in a previous house of mine, very nice stuff made in Brazil. American size, fantastic porcelain craftsmanship, but the tank mechanisms, pure junk. But it took 6 months or so to realize that. Oh, that's not to say they weren't tested at the factory. Yep, they'll work a while, couple months anyway. Maybe more if it's never used, like, for example, in a guest room or a maid's quarters and you don't have a live-in maid. But let me tell you, spending $30 and replacing that stuff is very good insurance. By the way, the same expat gringo who had the toilet problem told me that in a previous condo that he'd rented, one afternoon he was taking a nap on his sofa, and get this, he had a dream that he'd wet his pants. Turns out the people in the condo above him had a water leak, and it was seeping through his ceiling and dripping on his pants. So in the end, he said luckily his plumbing was okay, but the building's wasn't. Yet another reason it's a very stupid idea to build with plasterboard, you know, gypsum board, otherwise known as drywall. Yeah, I know, it's used everywhere in the States. It's cheap and dirty. And in the last 5 years, it's made its appearance here in Latin America in a big way, too. Again, because it's cheap and dirty and fast to put up. A lot cheaper, by the way, than cement, block, and mortar. However, it's pretty much a guarantee that everyone who uses that stuff finds out in the end it's a sponge for water and humidity. Again, it's a very bad move to use that stuff. You will regret it, believe me. The fact is, the only place in Latin America where I've seen they've been able to get away with it is in malls and commercial centers where businesses come and go and inside walls are being changed all the time. In other words, lots of drywall turnover. Oh, and by the way, forgot to mention drywall's easily damaged, especially by careless cleaning ladies, maintenance guys, and delivery guys. You'll find out they're forever banging into walls, and because most walls are block, concrete, and mortar, it'll just be the paint that's scratched, unless it's drywall. By the way, the worst place to use drywall? Beach houses. Man, you got troubles if you got drywall near the beach. But you knew that already, right? And now, a very special report. You know, we've all been reading all over the place about these so-called crypto and Bitcoin miners, right? Well, do you know where the number one cryptocurrency mining place in the world is? China. That figures. Number two, take a guess, and you'd be wrong. It's Venezuela. Say what? Which is why you just have to hear parts of this article describing, well, what none of us ever knew before. This stuff has been kept way under wraps because when someone opens their mouth about it, they either go to jail or disappear or worse. All right, so Venezuela is the number two crypto mining country in the world. Yet Bitcoin and crypto, except for the government crypto, which they're trying to create now, is illegal. And all outside analysts are betting the Venezuelan government crypto called the Petro will be a complete disaster. You know, everything governments touch turns to poop, right? The thing is, Bitcoin miners there are upper middle class Venezuelans who want to maintain their status. You remember what I said about the definition of upper middle class here in Latin America? That would be pretty much solid middle class up in the States. So it is true, not every private citizen in Venezuela spends his whole day in food lines. The so-called upper middle class and wealthy Venezuelanos are mining Bitcoin to make ends meet. So right now, what I've got for you is something very rare. A Bitcoin miner in Venezuela doing an interview. He calls himself Mr. X. Very revealing stuff here in a lot of ways. As usual, I'll paraphrase a bit and cut out the boring bits. Mr. X, like so many thousands of Bitcoin miners, is based in Caracas, the capital of Venezuela. And here's the first question. Why do you have to remain anonymous to do this interview? Mr. X says because mining isn't regulated yet. It's on the fringe of illegality. And many miners in Venezuela have gotten in big trouble. Next question. Give us your real-life perspective on what Bitcoin mining in Venezuela means to you. He says, right now it means everything because it's one of the only ways to defeat the economic catastrophe we're facing. Because by bypassing the currency exchange controls, my whole attention and thousands of others are on this business. He says, with the proceeds of mining, you get to feed your family and be able to save even some money for the future, among other benefits that come with a surplus balance. We're the only ones that have a surplus balance here in Venezuela. Then he's asked this question, what do people do with the Bitcoin after they've mined it? He says if you need local cash, bolivars, right away, then you end up selling some Bitcoin at a site called localbitcoins.com. That's to deal with your day-to-day living expenses. If you don't need the money right away, then you store it mainly on Coinbase and other crypto exchanges. Cold storage like Trezors and Nanos are not in our culture yet and very difficult to get. Which means everything's online, at least for now. Then he's asked, how do you exchange the Bitcoin and what do you exchange it for? He says you need to find an exchange that'll change Bitcoin to bolivars or dollars because no establishments in Venezuela take Bitcoin directly. That would be illegal. However, if you're buying more mining gear to increase your Bitcoin output, you'll have to exchange Bitcoin for Bitcoin Cash at a place called Bitmains. Then he's asked, where do most people store their Bitcoin in Venezuela? He said, unfortunately, they don't have hardware wallets yet. So the most popular wallet around is still Coinbase, sadly. I always tell people to get a cold storage device, such as a Nano Ledger or Trezor, even though that's not the culture and they're pretty much unavailable because people don't know how to use them yet. Then he says, people love the service Uphold.com because it lets them convert their Bitcoin to U.S. dollars, which can then be directly converted into boxes, even bags full of bolivars. Then comes the question, how many people are miners in Venezuela? What's your guess? Answer, it usually only happens in the medium to high class range, given that the people in poverty can't afford the equipment. I'd say between upper middle class and wealthy people, about 1 in 5 of them are involved in some way or another in mining. However, you should note that some Venezuelans are running to set up very big mining farms in the U.S., ones that have visas and can fly out, given they won't face any extortion up there like we do if we're caught. However, the big advantage here is that our electricity is practically free. So I'd say here in Venezuela, it's hard to believe, but there are literally thousands, I'd say even over 100,000 people mining Bitcoin. And as far as the mining equipment, the hardware, that's an interesting thing. It seems like the whole equipment supply chain from manufacturer to buyer just appeared out of nowhere. There was a demand and came the supply. Nearly all of it, by the way, coming out of China. That's partly because some people decided not to mine, but they figured it was more profitable to buy and sell the equipment to us. There is enough mining equipment around so that friends who teach other friends how to mine can get some easily. The mystery is that the government is not supposed to let that kind of equipment in. They're supposed to monitor the import of all equipment. Then he says, I just don't get how the equipment gets here. I understand if it comes directly from China in marked containers, it gets seized by the government. Which is why, rumor has it, when the equipment arrives at the Panama Canal, he gets transferred to another container with a different bill of lading without Chinese markings. And as far as the black market for Bitcoin mining equipment, you don't talk about it with anyone unless you absolutely have their confidence. You only talk about it with the people you trust. You can join the market pretty fast, though, if you want to. The question always is, how do people learn to mine Bitcoin, and how are they able to set themselves up to make money once they have the equipment? It turns out there's always a smart guy, someone smart enough to learn how to connect the equipment, and most of the time he ends up being the go-to guy, the guy. There was one particular guy who did my complete setup and trained me, for a fee, of course. The thing is, you don't want strangers in your mining facility or in your house because anything could lead you to the extortion party. Even the guy who set you up with the cooling system, for example, could betray you later that night when drinking with his buddies. Doesn't take long for the word to get out, so you have to keep your mouth shut. You probably heard the saying, the only way three people can keep a secret is if you kill two of them. The word on the street is that basically any physical empty space with an electric service is now hosting a Bitcoin mining rig or two or ten. And he says they're making ridiculous amounts of money. And the big farms even crazier because of the amazingly cheap electricity prices. Funny thing, the government actually subsidizes us Bitcoin miners. How is that for unintended secondary effects? Then he says, let me describe what makes this so cost effective. Now, so you can understand it, if you pay, let's say, 10 cents per kilowatt hour up in the United States, that means if you use 1,000 kilowatt hours per month, which is probably what an average U.S. family of four would use, in the States that would cost $100 a month. Whereas that same 1,000 kilowatt hours per month here in Venezuela costs us less than 2 U.S. cents, or $0.000125 per kilowatt hour. And that's why in terms of food, if you're a Bitcoin miner, you'll actually gain weight as opposed to the rest of the population. In terms of necessities, you could afford almost anything you need to live according to your own life status. Insurance, food, tuition, utilities, and almost any regular expenses become affordable. Then he says, the real goal of the Venezuela government is not to shut down miners, but to find out who's mining and how much we're making so they can tax us or confiscate our hardware and make us work for them. So, what are the consequences for getting caught as a crypto miner? Number one, extortion by gangs and the cops. Two, beatings. And number three, detention in jail if you don't cooperate with the police, who are often the extortionists and thieves themselves. And it's true, some people gain favors by telling the government on you, and they'll come and confiscate your equipment. And there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Oh, and by the way, he says, did you know there's a Spanish language Bitcoin and crypto online magazine? It's called Crypto Noticias. It's kind of a Latino Bitcoin blogger's Bible. We're well organized, you know. Unfortunately, I've heard multiple stories of how people get their mining operation raided, and during the raid, the government takes it and has you install it for them. Then they hire you as an infiltrator and make you rat out other miners and installers. Meanwhile, they continue to make Bitcoin from your mining equipment that you're forced to maintain. In fact, he said the Venezuelan government has set up an intelligence police division exclusively to find miners. And the two ways they find us are people ratting us out and by monitoring electric power usage in neighborhoods, looking for hotspots and irregularities. The way it works, when police find a mining operation, they count the number of machines you have, and the extortion rate is $1,000 per machine, depending more or less on the Bitcoin valuation of the moment. Then he says, I have it on good authority that in the capital, Caracas, in the military complex, a huge campus, by the way, it's just loaded with mining hardware and equipment, including ant mining equipment. So he says the downsides, of course, are getting busted and how that's going to affect your life. But the other downside is that Venezuela has one of the slowest internet speeds on the planet. On top of that, it's spotty and not really stable at all. Then he says, of course, every miner uses an IP changer. Like, for example, hide my ass IP changer. That way, there's no way to track you on the internet. You just change your IP address to another country, say Netherlands, and that's where it appears all the activity is happening, not in Venezuela. Then he says he's been mining himself for about 2 years. The question comes, how did he learn it? To which he says, the same way you learn to do anything in this lifetime, Google and YouTube. He says if you can't find it on YouTube, it's just not out there. Then he says the obvious question is, what kind of hardware do I run? What kind of equipment? He says, I only personally do Bitcoin mining. I don't care about the other cryptos. For me, a couple of S9 boards are enough. He says, really, you only need one or two S9 boards, and that's enough for you and your family to live nicely. You don't need a giant mining operation farm full of equipment. Then he says, if you're interested in learning about the equipment and what we're using yourself, just go to bitcointalk.org or bitmain.com. Those are our two main resources, he says. Then he says, as for me and my two boards, I've got around $7,000 invested. Probably four times as much as I would have needed to spend had I lived in a country where the stuff wasn't outlawed. Average Venezuelans can never afford the initial investment. However, if you can afford the hardware, you'll find electric power is cheaper than water. If I told you how much my electric bill was, even with my crypto mining outfits, you wouldn't believe me. And he says the real key to all this is to be able to change your bitcoins into dollars or the local bolivar money. And we do that using a site called localbitcoins.com. It's a lifesaver because there you can exchange your bitcoins for the local currency. Then he offers some tips for people thinking about getting into mining in Venezuela. He says, the golden rule is to stay undercover and evade detection. And to do that, you'll never want to have more than two workers per location. Which brings up the question, if some miners are making all that money in dollars and switching it over to mega bolivars, aren't they living like royalty and don't they get spotted out for that? And to that he says, yeah, there are many, many miners here who are very wealthy now. Their wealth is absolutely huge in terms of bolivars, meaning in no time they became high-class citizens, able to afford practically anything. And the key, not to be stupid about it. Don't squander it on the streets. Don't be a show-off or bad things will happen to you. In fact, he says almost everyone in Venezuela, middle class and up, are talking about Bitcoin. It shows up in practically every conversation. Even military officers are using Coinbase to buy in with fiat and store their own Bitcoins there. It's the only way we have, besides buying something like gold, to beat our terrible monetary inflation. And strangely enough, even though our bolivar is practically worthless against every other currency, there are a few local Bitcoin exchanges like localbitcoins.com where you can actually buy Bitcoin and other cryptos with bolivars.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.